strike with the right and a diving stop. Luis Zamudio vacuums. Can they break the seal here? Formella sends it in, and now top of the 18 with the left, and it is saved. Zamudio is there, and the shot by Trayvon Reed was stonewalled. Blackstock gives up the keys. Chip into the box. Here's Failing. He's got some room. One man to beat. Failing backs up towards the end line. Cross. Bad touch. Oh, and a save.
Welcome to Roots Pod, an audio production of Roots Blog and member of the Rootscast Broadcast Network. Again, normal service returns this week. This is Aaron here with John and Peter after, honestly, kind of a boring week of football. I guess that's from an Oakland perspective. Boring, not a bad thing, right? The soul sort of did what they needed to do and stomping the Pleasanton rage. That's a all caps. That's what that was meant to convey. Roots themselves, nil-nil draw. We'll get into that. But I guess we'll talk about the soul really briefly. Pretty ho-hum. I mean, as ho-hum as a 5-0 win can be, but they get back on track after sort of a bumpy stretch there. Sam Tran with a hat trick, first for her this season, first for the Oakland Soul in their brief history. So that's pretty cool. Briefly, they've gone into second place because CalStorm didn't play this weekend. Although by the time this episode is released, CalStorm will have played. I think they play host to Marin Sirens, and that's a very likely win for them. So short-lived time in second place, but you take what you can get. And I think actually CalStorm have the SF Glens coming up, so there's every chance, and you don't count your chickens before they hatch, yada yada yada, but there is every chance that the Soul will be in second place for a few weeks, basically until the end of the season. There's a lot riding on that game at the very end of the season with the SF Glens, but for the moment they are who we thought they were, basically. I guess one other note, halftime, right, of this last Soul game, there was a some on-field trivia that featured our very own Peter Bloom, who I think held his own, but was just ethered by the Oakland Soul Twitter account. They posted a nice picture of everyone who participated in the Twitter, and Peter was Peter had his eyes closed in the picture. It was you have to zoom in, but I sort of encourage you to do that because it's you get a nice surprise. So I've encouraged him to make it an emoji on the Roots Discord. I think if anyone else could help me peer pressure him into doing that, I would appreciate it. I think it deserves to be an emoji.
I'll do it while John talks about the stadium.
Okay. Well, hey, there you go. Dropping the lead. We'll get to the Roots very, genuinely ho-hum game against Pittsburgh Riverhounds. But as Peter said, we've got some stadium news to talk about. We have talked about the fact that there are rumblings that the Roots are looking at a spot in the Coliseum parking lot as a temporary option before the Malibu lot is ready, right? There's some work that needs to be done in the Malibu lot. That's going to take a little time. So until such time as that happens, they're looking at another part of the Coliseum parking lot, and at a meeting of the Oakland Alameda Joint Powers Authority, the group that runs the property, a plan was discussed to let the Roots use Lot C on a temporary basis, right, until the Malibu lot is ready. Lot C is the southernmost parking lot on the Coliseum property. I would describe it as southeast because, of course, you think of Oakland going east-west, even though it goes north-south. But it's adjacent to the Malibu lot, pretty much right up against 880. Now, John, as you reported on Twitter, a lot of the discussion about this was held in executive session or whatever it is they call it when they want to discuss stuff off the public record. But you did transcribe a quote from Henry Gardner, who is the executive director of the Joint Powers Authority Commission. All right, it's the JPA Commission, right? The Joint Powers Authority Commission sounds like something made up by someone who wants to caricature local government, but he is the executive director of that. I'm not going to repeat the whole thing, but just to summarize it, essentially what he says is that the biggest stumbling block at this point is scheduling, right? In 2024, you'll still have 81 A's games and a bunch of concerts and other big events, maybe not at the Coliseum itself, but also at Oakland Arena. And the JPA is basically their biggest concern at this point is, are the Roots going to be able to get out of the way for those events, right? Because they'll need all of the parking lots. And the Roots are talking about taking up one of the bigger ones. So will they be able to tear down this stadium, you know, the next time the Coliseum hosts Bad Bunny or whatever? That appears to be the at least based on this quote, that's the biggest stumbling block. But John, what else can you tell us about the kind of developments in this story over the last couple of weeks?
Is a complicated situation. Yeah, they said the biggest hurdle was multiple events, but I think the whole situation kind of speaks to what has happened at Laney and the viability of that being an option for Roots. I mean, it speaks to the relationship, how it has kind of waned, and how you can't play around with availability issues and having that on a whim. So the big issue is scheduling with big events at the Coliseum. I don't think there is a worry about same day events with A's. Honestly, when you think about it, you can have people go to a day game at A's games and then walk over, go to a Roots game. I think that might be a thing. It'll definitely be a thing for the 68 members if it happens. It is that issue with scheduling at the arena, but more importantly, having big concerts at the Coliseum. So you would think like, oh, how is that an issue? Well, the issue with that is music concerts usually, you know, they come together sometimes a year in advance, but sometimes much less than that, 3 months, 2 months, 1 month, adding a second show. You know, there are those things that the city does not want to miss out on. So it would be a matter of Roots having to be very, very flexible with their schedule, which I think is a possibility. You think of take college football, for instance. You know, Cal doesn't release the start times for all their games until a number of weeks before the game is even played. So maybe it would be something along those lines, but also let's keep in mind that the USL Championship is not college football, you know? So there is that issue with sponsorships, and, you know, a sponsorship will move things for college football. Will a sponsorship move things for a Division II soccer team on KTVU? You know, it's hard to say. So those are some of the hurdles that have to go into it. But, you know, Henry Gardner said these aren't insurmountable issues. There are hurdles that can be accomplished. So it's a matter of, seeing how quickly it can come together, because it has to come together rather quickly, all the planning, all of that. You know, if all this does happen, the wheels are going to start turning really fast, and we should hear stuff in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I wouldn't think it would be insurmountable. I mean, like you said, some concerts are there's less notice to the city. Let's put it like this. They come together such that there's less notice to the city. But I mean, the Roots have made a habit of canceling games on 2 or 3 hours notice so far. So I would think 2 months is by far enough time to move things around. I get that Oakland probably is probably the city that wants these assurances. You know, I think the USL, what is the USL going to care if the Roots move a game from Saturday to Sunday, you know, 2 weeks or 2 months, you know, in advance? I imagine it's just the city of Oakland wants assurances that there's a process in place. There's not going to be any hiccups on that.
Or it just might be you play at a game at noon instead of 7, or you play a game at 1 instead of 7. you know, I think those could be options, but we'll see. Also, multiple venues can be an option. East Bay probably won't be because they have
at some point they're actually gonna do those renovations.
Yeah, they're gonna have construction, but you know, it could be something to keep an eye on. But we could, if Lot C does become the plan, you can expect that would be for the entirety of 2024.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing we should mention, we're talking about this like the Oakland Roots, it's also the Soul, right? So yes. It's not. It's and 5-1-0, yeah. So it's not just the 17 home games plus any potential playoff games, you know, knock on wood, but it's also the, I mean, how many home games is Seoul going to have? 8, 9, something like that. And that's a number that's probably going to change as more teams get added to the W League. 5-1-0 has this roughly the same number. So you're talking about 30-some matches. There are not like a huge number of concerts you got to work around over there, but at some point, if you're talking about 30 soccer matches in addition to the 81 baseball games over there, that does become a kind of congested schedule. Like you say, there's reason to be optimistic. You know, if this is how they're talking about it too, right? I think that's the other thing for me. This is not being spoken about like there are numerous hurdles. They may or may not be. We don't really know what they are, right? He's named a specific thing, which is apparently the big sticking point, and said it's not insurmountable. And to me, that just suggests that discussions that progress has been made. Discussions have been fruitful. This very well could happen, which is very encouraging because, you know, they were gonna be itinerant again next year if nothing came together. And it's nice to know we'll have something to look forward to, and maybe we can get back onto ESPN too. You know, that'd be nice. Wouldn't mind that.
Definitely would be. I mean, it would be when you look at these stadiums, you think of, you know, Phoenix Rising, how quickly their stadium came together. I mean, they literally just picked up and moved their setup at Wild Horse Pass and moved it over next to the Phoenix Airport. So you could think something like this would be similar. I'm told the C lot option would be at a little bit lesser scale than what would be at the Malibu lot. But yeah, all exciting stuff, and hopefully it gets moving because, I mean, you know, everybody wants to get back to Oakland. It's important to the club. It's important to the fans. I mean, and let's be real, playing right next to 880, like that's going to attract fans. That's going to attract, you know, all those people sitting in traffic and they look over to the lot there and see a stadium. Say, what is that? Oh.
One thing for my future, I think one criteria, do not need to use 880 to commute. That is, that is a must have for me.
I was at a work trip in Los Angeles this last week, and I was just chatting with coworkers down there about their commutes, and they were like, they all drive, and they're like, do you take BART? Like, do you take the Bay Bridge? It's like, I would, if I for whatever reason had to commute by car to San Francisco, I would change jobs.
Yeah. There's no good time of day to be driving over the Bay Bridge. Maybe 2 o'clock in the morning. But then you have to wonder why it is you're driving at 2 o'clock in the morning. Well, another thing that will help the Roots get on to ESPN2 are games with slightly more entertainment value than we got last weekend. I would describe it as somewhat uneventful. I mean, let's just look at your live blog, John. At 15 minutes, you were like, not much to write about so far. And there were actually zero entries in the live blog after the 74th minute. I think that tells you a lot of what you need to know about what happened. It was, it seemed driven by an Oakland Roots game plan that acknowledged that three of the best players on the roster from about 3 weeks ago are either no longer on the roster or currently unavailable. It really felt like the goal was to slow things down, don't let it get out of hand, keep the game under control. I mean, did anyone even have a shot on target from within the 18-yard box? I honestly think the answer is no.
No, yeah, because Anwar's was the only shot on target in the first half. And yeah, Reed had a shot. I think it was outside the 18. And there was one more that I'm blanking on.
Memo, I think.
Yeah.
I guess if I'm going to say something positive, and I'm willing to do so, I'll say two things that are positive. One, Pittsburgh did come into the game as the best team in the East. So any kind of result against Pittsburgh is a positive sign. Two, Brutes wanted to slow the game down and were able to do it. You know, that they did not allow, they didn't allow Pittsburgh to run through them. They didn't allow Pittsburgh to get their teeth into the game, to get any control over the game. So I guess I take that as a positive that they're still, they still were in control of the match, despite the fact that almost nothing happened. I'm not even sure what Oakland was trying to make happen, if anything, honestly, but the fact that they never lost their grip on the game, I think is a positive sign, given that it was a quality opponent, even if it is, you know, a home game. But especially when you consider the fact that two of their better defenders are on international duty right now, and they deputized one of their defensive mids for the central center back position. Mm-hmm. I have very little else positive to say. I mean, I have very little else to say generally about that game. There's just so little to talk about.
I mean, I took it as a positive, getting the point. I mean, when you put it in perspective, Pittsburgh's a great team. They're a strong team. They're likely will be top four in Eastern Conference, which means they're a title contender. I mean, to make them, I thought Roots were the much better side in the first half, at least. Second half, it kind of, you know, definitely swung in the other direction. But, you know, I wasn't like crazy, crazy worried. I mean, the defense was solid. I mean, and yeah, I think the first half was much better than the second. Not sure if either side deserved a goal. I mean, the game had 0-0 draw written all over it. But I mean, it's good defense. It's good to hold them, one of the best teams in the East, to no goals. They're a good offensive team. Really big from forward all the way down to the back line. But it speaks to the quality of defense that Roots have fostered under Delgado. I wrote it in the blog that they are quietly the second best defensive team in the Western Conference. And I think that's a credit to the coaching staff.
I think, you know, Albert Dequa, who's tied for the league lead in goals, is injured, which is the thing we talked about. Well, I guess we didn't talk about pregame, but was in the preview post. He last played for Pittsburgh against Las Vegas Lights. And since then, their offense hasn't been the same, but they had a 1-0 win against Loudoun, a 1-0 win against Phoenix, and a 2-0 win against Charleston. So the Roots are still the only team to shut out Pittsburgh in that stretch. And only four teams have shut out Pittsburgh all season. So, you know, the shutout is certainly meaningful. The Roots did not line up to attack, but, you know, if you're gonna park the bus in a way that still gets you a point, and they did.
Yeah, and I think one of the things we noted, sort of, there were some positive signs from the midfield, right? Yasiel Cedeño seems like that's a good pickup. I mean, he hasn't done enough to justify replacing Eduardo Rito on the roster yet, but at least, you know, player for player, obviously there are other considerations to take into account when you look at that deal, but he hasn't provided that much, but you can see, you know, why he is someone that Hartford fans were sort of upset to lose. He had probably too many giveaways. But it's hard to, I think at this point we can't say yet, is that because you're just taking too many risks with the ball, or is it because you don't have a rhythm with your teammates yet because you just showed up last week? You know, I'm willing to say, well, let's wait a little bit more time and see how things unfold, because he is kind of a spark in there, and I thought his counter pressing was good. His movement was good. I think he's quicker than most of the other options we have in midfield right now. So that's a good thing. You know, if we're not going to be a tall team, we should be a fast team. Short and slow is that's not a recipe for success. So he's got that. He's got some pace. The one thing though that I think probably came to a head in this game is that, and I feel like I gave this guy a lot more leash than many others in the fan base, but it is very difficult to justify starting Anwar Pelaez at this point.
I'm not hating on his performance too much. I thought he had the only shot on target in the first half. I mean, which was probably the best chance of the game. I mean, he's very physical, but I can definitely agree that our best option at center forward is Johnny right now. He's having a great season. But yeah, I wasn't disappointed with Anwar. I think he's still building into it, and he has a lot of speed, had a nice shot. I mean, yeah, I mean, we can't agree and disagree at the same time.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm not saying I want him off the squad or anything, but one of the things I recall liking about his early season performances is the way he was hanging on the shoulder of the last defender and causing backlines problems. And I think that no one is respecting him right now. You know, the back line of Pittsburgh was like, yeah, sure, what are you going to do? You know, they were in position to recover every single time. He didn't have the pace to outrun them. He didn't have the strength to hold them off. He got a shot, but it was from like 30 yards out. If you're going to sit on the back shoulder like that, and maybe this is also a function of the way they were playing, right? I mean, he's going to sit on the back shoulder 45 yards from goal. What do you know, maybe there's just only so much one can do, but whatever it is, the attack feels more dynamic with Johnny on the field. On the other hand, there's like four forwards on the roster. So like maybe we add someone there, and it's not a lot of depth.
Yeah. I think that there's an argument to make that Johnny is also better at left wing. I think it's pretty clear Formella is better at left wing than he is at center forward, but it looks kind of like, you know, Johnny might be as well, which means you're left with Pelaez as your number nine, for better or worse.
Yeah. You know, every year we have people added to this roster, I think we all sort of expected it, but I expected it again this year. At this point, the Roots are what? They're 6-4-4. They're 14 games into a 34 match season. Like, if you're going to add somebody, it sort of has to be like now. Josie Altidore is a free agent now, right? So
yes, I think they got to do it.
Yeah, a certain Roots front office member will listen to this and start laughing because I was yelling at him after the last game, like, when are we getting another player? It has to happen. He said, be patient. He said, it's good not to panic. I said, it's not panicking. It's bolstering. Good playoff teams bolster their rosters. You know, so the feedback I got was be patient. They're going to get the right guy. So I guess that means a move is coming. When? Who knows? Come on, Farrell.
I feel like it's totally self-evident that Josie Altidore is this season's Quincy Ameriquois. You know, the Roots have moved forward a little bit. Altidore is better than Ameriquois was, but the Roots are better than they were 2 years ago. Washed up MLS striker is exactly what the Roots need to make a playoff push.
That's exactly what we need. This is our plea for it to happen.
What do? You pull a USL level Messi move, give him 1% stock in the team.
There it is. There it is. I mean, it'll go, that stock is undervalued right now because they've got the stadium coming up next year. So this is perfect. This is a good time for Josie to get in on the ground floor.
That's right.
Yeah.
Him and Tom Hanks.
Oh, and Tom Hanks. Yeah. Yes.
Acknowledge us, Tom. Acknowledge us.
That's all we want. All right. Well, the Roots it's not a bad result. They're now, let's see, 7-1-1 loss in the last 8 matches, which is, that's pretty good. 4-3-1 in their last 8. It's not going to blow the doors off of anybody, but it's certainly better than they were before. So things are, I mean, I won't say they're looking sideways. They are looking up. They have slipped to 6th in the table as of the time of recording, but I think is Monterey Bay won last weekend, right? I think that's what happened there. But they still have a game in hand on everyone in front of them. And if they win it, they move up they'll be behind
third.
San Antonio on goal difference. Yeah. But they're, it's right there. There's a lot of congestion there in the middle of the Western Conference. One team that would like to be part of that discussion, Phoenix Rising, who we just saw. I don't know why we have to jam these two fixtures right, basically one right after the other. But Phoenix is now coming to Oakland for possibly an even spicier matchup. Our old friend Juan Guerra will be back. I'm sure Steve is excited. So this is going to be spicy. But Phoenix, you'll not be. They also drew. This week they drew 2-2 home to Louisville City, which is actually also a pretty good result, if we're being honest.
You know, it would be more encouraging if it wasn't Juan Guerra, because it's a tie, it's just funny.
Yeah, it's just what he does. I'd like to avoid that curse this week if we could, and not draw again. Although it's again, this will be another match without Tamakas and Hackshaw, so. It's gonna be rough, but John, what do you do? How do you, given the players that the Roots have at their disposal right now, what would you do to create a spark in attack?
Well, I mean, to create a spark under Delgado seems to mean do something completely unexpected. So who knows what that means? Will it be Anwar in the 9? Will it be Johnny in the 9? Will it be Formella in the 9? We don't know. I think we'll see Cedeno in the midfield again. Like you mentioned, I think he's been impressive. You know, we gave him man of the match for the last game just because he made a good impact in his debut start. So I think, you know, he'll be a spark. They didn't have him in the last game, so that's an added wrinkle. Not a lot of film study for Phoenix to pull from there. So I think, yeah, the spark will be from whatever Delgado has planned in that attacking rotation. Because, yeah, we're not really sure who will be starting. It feels like it's hard to expect the same starting lineup 2 matches in a row right now.
Do you know if DiNaziano is returning anytime soon?
I mean, it was still a lower body injury for the last how long, since like the 5th game. I mean, yeah. So it must be pretty serious. We aren't given any details on what lower body is, but I mean, if it's lingering this long, what can you expect it to be? Some hopefully not ligament damage, hopefully not a knee. Knees take forever to heal.
Yeah,
so we'll see what that is. But I mean, it kind of speaks to Cedeno's addition, because DiNaziano is missing time. You need that creative option. Then Danny Gomez goes down, and you know, he wasn't the most creative, but he was a facilitator. So you bring in this guy who is a, you know, Oakland Roots typical t- type of player in Cedeño, who can play multiple positions, play out wide, kick it back inside. I think we can expect Cedeño for a little while now.
Yeah. Peter, do you start Wolfgang in this one?
Oh, maybe. Like in place of Wright and swap Diaz over to the other side. I mean, I think that there's a...
Wherever you want to put him. Maybe.
Well,
we play in center forward role. I don't know.
I think he's worth considering in midfield, but the management doesn't seem to think so. I mean, I think you run out Cedeño again. Nane and center back seem to work okay, but I feel like it may also have been part of what was so boring. But, you know, the person he would go in place of is Metsoso. I'm really not sure. I mean, I think maybe the only change I make is that Johnny and Formella in place of... so that is Johnny up top and Pelaez to the bench.
You're right that management doesn't seem to see Wolfgang as a midfielder, but we are sort of running out of bodies here. You know, the depth is being stretched. They've got... I mean, it's a 34-game season. It's not like this is taxing anybody necessarily, but you'd like to have options, right? And I think last match, who'd we get off the bench? It was... we got
Trayvon,
right? Johnny, Trayvon, Benny. Johnny, Wolfgang in at the very end, yep. And the other people sitting on the bench were all 5-1-0 players, right? Edgar Cruz and I forget the other one, but I think everyone else on the bench was 5-1-0. So it's pickings are pretty slim right now as far as lineup options go. But
yeah. I think that was an interesting question there about Wolfgang, whether you start him, just because it makes me think of right at the end of the match, how he had to, how he kind of took himself off. He couldn't even get up off the floor after getting a cramp. So, I mean, even if he's okay, which I hope he is, I'm sure he is, to me, it speaks to that depth factor that you bring up right there, you know? What happens if we get another injury at outside back? What happens if we get two? What happens if Memo and Kevin both need to come off in a match? What do we do with that outside back spot? So, yeah, I mean, my mind goes straight to darkness, as we've talked about before, you know, but it's my job straight to speculate darkness. All the outcomes possible, you know, so... That is one. We'll see. And also, Nane in midfield. That was also a product of injury. Tarek Mourad picked up an injury in the Friday before the game. But he was out running around during pregame warmups. He was on the subs list. So that tells me it's not serious, and we'll probably get him back.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, so how do you guys see this one unfolding? John, why don't you start?
Well, before we go into predictions, I got some good stats
for
the match here.
All right.
Because it's intriguing. We got, you know, my big takeaway that I've been talking about with this, you know, this matchup, Phoenix and Oakland, is just how it's sort of a case study for Noah Delgado and for Juan Guerra. I mean, it's sort of interesting because although Guerra is in his second job, it's still very much he just started his career as a head coach, and the same could be said about Noah Delgado. It's his first head coaching job. So through 25 league matches, Delgado has built a record of 12-5-8, not counting 1-1 in US Open Cup. Now let's go to Guerra through 48 matches, league matches, is 14-19-15. So very interesting disparity there. I mean, Delgado is building a winning record, and Guerra is kind of still struggling to get those results, even through, you know, he's getting a lot of ties. But quietly, now let's look at defensively, because that's really been the big change between the two. Oakland has 11 clean sheets in the 27 total matches that Delgado has been at the helm for. And in Guerra's whole career, 48 matches, 50 matches counting the two U.S. Open Cups, or three, he has 8 total clean sheets. So it's very interesting, the systems at work here. And it's going to be interesting to follow both of these coaches throughout their career, because really they're coming up together. So who has the edge there? Who is what? I'm not sure, but I like Delgado as a coach. Juan is an interesting subject too, because I think what Phoenix fans have to acknowledge is that this is a start of a guy's career, and there's going to be a lot of hiccups. You know, even though they want perfect and they expect perfect, it's going to take time with him, and that's evident just by the numbers here. Anyways, let's get into what happens.
Yeah, so do we get a clean sheet here, or does the does Juan's sort of vibe win out and we get a multi-goal tie?
I think Roots get this one done. I mean, as obviously, have I ever predicted otherwise?
You're just setting you up, man.
I'm going...
I say this as predictions, but this segment is really called How Are the Roots Going to Win the Next Game?
How Are Roots Going to Win by John. That's me. Roots will win, and it's going to make everyone excited. It's going to be a 3-1 drubbing.
Wow.
I was going to say 3-1, Roots. I think that that's... I think that 2-2... I think the difference in that 2-2 game at Phoenix was that it was at Phoenix. And, I think the Roots also stand to benefit more from seeing this team 2 weeks ago. I wish they had Tomakis and Hackshaw. I'd feel better about that. And that is almost certainly what I'm going to blame it on if I am incorrect in this prediction. But I think they get it done. I think they do this one for the fans, for the brand.
All right. Well, I also think they'll get it done, but I am currently a non-believer in the Roots attack, so I'm going to go 1-0. They'll work out something, I'm sure, but you guys sound like you think this is going to be an easy one on some level, and I just don't see that.
My thought is, I think for the same reasons that Peter just mentioned, I think Roots were able to pull a lot from the last game. I think they'll benefit from playing them 2 weeks ago. And I think Guerra is the type of coach that is just plug and play. He's going to do what he does, put his system out there and say, try to beat us. And I think Noah is a game planner. And just based off the last match too, I mean, it was fluid counterattack after counterattack, and I think we might see something similar, and hopefully they come in bunches. Let's see.
Well, I certainly hope so. I'm not wishing for a stressful 1-0. Just that's kind of how I see it playing out. You could say a lot of good things about Oakland from the last 2 weeks, and yet it's still two draws. And that gives me a little pause on some level. But they're also still a playoff team, and what more can you ask for, right? We just get into the playoffs and see what happens. Some interesting things have happened in the playoffs the last 2 years. So, this one will be at home, thankfully. No one has to fly to Phoenix to watch the Roots play in person this weekend. I'm sure we'll all be out there to give Juan let's call it a robust homecoming, to give him a robust homecoming. You know, warm up the vocal cords ahead of time. You know, I don't know what kind of vocal exercises you may have done in the past, but you know, maybe do some of those. Let's get those vocal cords all nice and warmed up and really get behind the team, and maybe also give some people on the other sideline the old what for during this game, because this is our chance. As you recall, he did not coach. He was not on the sideline for the Rising visit to Oakland last year, so this is our first opportunity to quote unquote, thank him for everything he did for Oakland. So obviously I'm looking forward to it. I hope you are too. We'll see you in Hayward this weekend. And until then, off the roots.